You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Doctor, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the war, and I'd like to give you information, asking for more, but blood makes noise. There's a ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. Dave Hodges, James White here. We are the co-hosts, and we're coming to you live on WMQM, and we're broadcast on Global Star Radio Network, and we're really happy to be with you on this Wednesday, December 9th. Man, where has the year gone? It's just absolutely incredible, and we have a really, really exciting show for you. One of my favorite writers. Jim just loves this guy, too. A terrific writer. We're talking specifically about Michael Snyder. He has the Economic Collapse blog, and I'm going to throw over the formal introduction so we can kick this off, because you're not going to want to miss what Michael Snyder has to say about what's going on with the economy and what to expect. Excuse me. Michael, welcome to the show. And James, why don't you go ahead and handle the formal introduction?
Will do, Dave. Thanks. Yes, Michael T. Snyder is a graduate of the McIntyre School of Commerce at the University of Virginia and has a law degree and an LLM from the University of Florida Law School. He's a very active blogger and also a respected researcher, writer, speaker, and activist. You can follow him on the Economic Collapse blog at theeconomiccollapseblog.com. Michael Snyder, thanks so much for joining us on the Common Sense Show.
It's so great to be with you guys today. Thank you for inviting me to be on.
Well, Michael, it's a great pleasure to have you on. You know, as Dave so aptly stated, you are probably one of the most prolific writers in alternative media, and I dare say maybe even in all of media. Give us a little bit, if you can. Tell us a little bit about your background. I know you have a background in law, and I think if I remember correctly, you worked sort of down there in Washington. Is it called K Street, where the big boys are, I think, down there? And you kind of have made a real drastic change from that lifestyle to what you're doing now. So just for benefit of those listeners out there that may have not be familiar with you, give us a little bit, dig a little bit deeper into your background, Michael, if you don't mind.
Yeah, before I was doing this, I was working as an attorney right in the heart of Washington, D.C. When I graduated from law school down at the University of Florida, I came back up to the D.C. area, which is kind of the area where I went to high school and was raised, at least for the later part of my childhood. And so I was, as you mentioned, I was working right down there on the heart of K Street. And when I left D.C., I was working in a shiny, beautiful new building right down there on K Street where all the lawyers and lobbyists work. And people might say, well, wow, Michael, you know, you were successful. You're making, you know, decent money, you know, this and that. But really, I didn't feel successful. I was just another one of kind of the vast collection of mindless drones trudging into D.C. every day, trying to make a living, trying to pay the bills, but I didn't feel like I was having any impact on the world. I was becoming increasingly distressed about the direction our country was heading, but I thought, what in the world could I do? Because nobody knew who I was, nobody cared who I was. I was just an average guy just putting on his pants and going to work every day, trying to make a living, trying to get by from month to month. I thought, what in the world could I possibly do? So I looked at some different things. Eventually, I started looking at blogging. And I thought, well, you know, I read that there are over a million blogs already out there. So I thought, why in the world would anyone look at what I'm saying compared to a million other people? But I started doing it. I started writing. And at first, very, very few people took notice of what I was doing. But I stuck with it. And over time, the audience started to grow. And then at the end of 2009, I started the Economic Collapse blog, and it really struck a chord because at the time, millions of people had been losing their jobs, people had been losing their homes, they didn't understand what was happening, and they knew they weren't getting the truth from the mainstream media. And so, you know, it really took off, and it really started to build very, very rapidly. And shortly thereafter, my wife and I, we left the D.C. area, and originally we moved out to a little town not too far from Seattle called Carnation, where we lived for a little while, but we just rented because we knew that's not where we wanted to settle permanently. And from there, we ended up coming out to where we are now in the mountains of Idaho a little over 4 years ago. And all this time, I've been doing this website and endoftheamericandream.com and themostimportantnews.com. And I've been blessed to have my articles distributed and republished all over the internet. And so today, from my little home in the mountains of Idaho, I'm literally touching people all over the world, which amazes me to this day. But this is what it's all about. It's average people like me, average people like you, working together, doing what we can with our gifts and abilities to try to make an impact on this world that's going crazy.
Well, Michael, let me ask you, you talk in terms of making an impact, and you certainly do with your very prolific writing. But if you were to circle one area that you would like to wake everyone up to in the country, what would that be?
If I could wake, well, I think that over, in terms of one, it's hard to pin one specific thing, but just in general, what I would like to encourage people to really think about is where their beliefs come from. Why they think the way they do. You know, in the United States today, the average American, this is according to the Washington Post, came out not too long ago, but they said that the average American watches 293 minutes of television a day. Now that's almost 5 hours a day. Now, in addition to that, in addition to television, we've got our DVDs, our movies, our video games, our cell phones, our internet, and everything else, our radio. You know, we've always got to have something on. We've always got to be plugged into the matrix. In fact, for some Americans, if they don't have at least something going on in the background, they'll start to actually feel something physically wrong with them, physically uncomfortable if they're not plugged in or they don't have something on. So all that propaganda that's constantly being fed into our minds has a dramatic impact on us, and more than 90% of everything we're getting through television, through the media, is through publishing houses, books, movies, everything else. More than 90% of all the media is controlled by just six gigantic media corporations, which in turn are owned by the elite of the world. So really, what we talk about with each other at the family table when we sit down to have dinner or at work or at school, the conversations we have, what are they about? They're about a sporting event we just saw on television, or they're about some television show or movie we just watched, or something we saw in the news, which is controlled by the elite. You know, the agenda of what we talk about, of what's important, of what how we interact with one another, and the things that we, you know, our topics of conversation, the agenda is really set by these giant media corporations. And so what I, in answer to your question, I would encourage people, hey, you've got to learn how to unplug from this system, from this matrix, with this giant beast that's really telling us what to think and really setting the agenda for what's important in our society.
You know, Michael, recently for a topic that would be of great interest, I think, to most of the listeners of this program, recently I know you had the great pleasure, you had considered a great pleasure to be on the Jim Baker Show. I want to say you were on there for two nights in a row. Tell us a little bit about that experience, if you could, because I think probably everybody within the sound of my voice here in this listening audience is familiar with Jim Baker and his network and his television show on cable, actually, which there I believe his network is probably one of those 4% that are not owned by the corporate media. Tell us a little bit about the Jim Baker Show, if you don't mind, Michael.
Yeah, well, I was absolutely astounded when they contacted me because, as I am when anyone contacts me, as the, you know, the just me an average person, just, you know, writing these articles on the internet, and the people that take notice, it amazes me. But one day I got an email, and I told my wife, I said, I think I just got an email from the Jim Baker Show, and it turned out it was actually true. And so they wanted me to come down for a conference, a prophecy conference they were having. And originally I wasn't even supposed to be on the television show. I was just supposed to kind of speak at some side meetings that they were having. But then I got down there and I settled into my room the night before, and I woke up the next morning and there's someone knocking at my door. And it turns out, Pastor Jim decided he wanted to have me on the panel on the show that morning. So I hurried up and dressed and got ready. I went down and John Shorey was on that morning, and we had a great time. And so I was on for a series of shows there in September. Then they invited me back in October and I was on a few more shows. And then I was on just recently here in November. I was really honored to be invited on, because the Jim Baker Show, they are doing a lot of really great things. They're encouraging people to get prepared. They're warning people about what's coming. And so I applaud them for that, as in, you know, so many different shows and radio programs and whatever are doing such a great job. And what I see today in kind of the Liberty or Patriot movement is so many people are fighting with one another. But what I try to do is build bridges to whoever is on the same side as me. You know, I don't spend my time and energy pointing my weapons at people who are in the foxhole next to me. I'm just worried about how we're being attacked in a thousand different directions by the world, by those that are trying to take our liberty and freedom. So I'm not interested in squabbling and fighting with the people who are on the same side as me. And so whenever I'm invited on different shows and programs, even if I may not agree with them 100% on every single point, you know, I definitely recognize who's on the same side as me.
Yeah, that's an excellent, excellent point. James and I share the very same philosophy. We try not to get drawn into these intramural disputes because our numbers aren't sufficient enough to affect political and social change to the level we want. And we certainly can't be cutting into those ranks where we're trying to build them. Let me ask you just a real pointed question here, Michael. We have a $19 trillion deficit. We have a over $200 trillion unfunded mandated liabilities. And of course, the 800-pound gorilla in the room is the 1.5 quadrillion credit swap derivatives debt with a $500 trillion interest rate. What do we do with this? How are we even staying afloat? Why is anyone foolish enough to take my dollar?
Well, it amazes me too, in that, we had the last financial crisis, and none of the underlying problems ever got fixed. Instead, what have we done since 2007? We've doubled the size of the national debt. You know, global debt as a whole is somewhere around $200 trillion. And of course, you mentioned derivatives. The size of the derivatives bubble is just ridiculous and kind of hanging like a sort of Damocles over the global financial system, which could come at any time. I truly believe that this recklessness, this gambling, these derivatives are going to play a starring role in the coming crisis. In fact, there are, five of the too big to fail banks here in the United States. I'm talking about banks like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase. Five of them have exposure to derivatives of at least $35 trillion, each one of them. You know, and so instead of learning their lessons, these big banks have become more reckless. There's been more gambling. Our problems are bigger than before. The imbalances are bigger than ever before. So we're set up for a great, great crisis. And I know the commercial break's coming up pretty shortly, but afterwards, we can talk about all these patterns that happened just before the crisis. The last crisis in 2008 are happening again right in front of our eyes, and yet most of the experts won't see it. But the same setup, the same things that are happening that happened the last time are happening right now. And so I believe we're right at the precipice of this just tremendous financial crisis, financial collapse, which is going to have tremendous implications for every single man, woman, and child in the entire country and the entire world ultimately.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And we do need to step aside for just a really quick break here. You're listening to The Common Sense Show with Jim and Dave hosting, and we're on WMQM AM 1600 in the great city of Memphis in the wonderful state of Tennessee. And I want to talk to you about my friend Steve Quayle. Steve Quayle sells precious metals. In fact, his company is called Renaissance Precious Metals. And as you just heard me say, I put a big disdain out for the dollar. I don't know how it's still afloat. And I think that people that are heavily vested in the dollar and have lots of their money in the bank, I think the day of reckoning is coming. So I would really encourage you to call Steve Quayle. Have a frank discussion with Steve. Just talk to him. Tell him what your financial circumstances are, and he'll suggest a course of action. I trust him. I'm a customer. Steve's number is 406-586-4842. Again, that's Steve Quayle, Renaissance Precious Metals, 406-586-4842. He's ready, willing, and able to talk to you about your financial future. Well, Jim, let me have you take the reins here a little bit, and let's take this in a direction that you want to take it, because there's so much to talk about. So I'm just going to throw the mantle over to you, and let's go with it.
Well, you know, I think that Michael was on something there. You know, events in history have certainly do repeat themselves. And as Michael aptly stated, a lot of the same red flags, as you might call them, that were present before the 2008, you know, collapse that really never was carried through all the way that it should have been. They should have flushed the system then. They didn't, of course. But Michael, go over, if you can, some of those same signs that you're seeing from your in-depth research. And I know that you throw yourself into this stuff day and night, pretty much. Give us some insight onto the signs you're seeing currently.
Yeah, so let's talk about, for example, the price of oil has been making a lot of headlines this week. What did we see in 2008? It shot way above $100 a barrel for a short period of time, then the price of oil crashed. It ended up crashing below $40 a barrel ultimately, and it started crashing really, really hard before the U.S. stock market crashed. Well, now we're seeing a similar thing, where last year the price of oil was up over $100 a barrel. It's crashed and, you know, kind of stabilized for a little while there, but then now it's falling again. And just this week, it's fallen below $38 a barrel for the very first time since the last financial crisis, the last Great Recession. Another thing is, if you look at commodities, industrial commodities, I'm talking about copper, iron ore, tin, aluminum, you know, all those industrial commodities, those prices crashed right before the 2008 crisis. They're crashing now. In fact, the Bloomberg Commodity Index just hit its lowest level since 1999, even lower than at any point during the last crisis. Or you look at junk bonds. Junk bonds, don't let the name throw you. Junk bonds are basically bonds that have higher risk, and so they typically have a higher return. But I watch them very, very closely. Why? Well, if you go back to 2008, junk bonds started crashing and crashing hard before the stock market crashed. And typically before there is a stock market crash, you're going to start to see problems with junk bonds. They tend to come from the weaker and more financially risky corporations. And that's where you usually start to see trouble signs erupt first. Well, we're seeing it again. We're seeing, in fact, junk bonds, for example, there's a high yield bond ETF known as JNK. Those are the call letters that I watch very, very closely. And I was watching to see when it would cross the psychologically important 35 barrier. And it did this week for the first time since the last financial crisis. It crossed that barrier on Monday. On Tuesday, it went all the way down to 34.44 at one point. And so we're seeing this crash in junk bonds that I've been waiting to see. I've been anticipating we would see. It's happening right now. And so this is another huge red flag that's gone up. We've seen global GDP growth go negative for the first time since 2009, the last recessions. We're seeing S&P 500 net profit margins, they're steeply declining. And why that's important is because if you go back and look at every single recession since 1973, there's only been one time when we've seen a 60 basis point decline in S&P 500 net profit margins that didn't lead to a recession. So that's another huge red flag that's going up that's saying recession. If a recession was coming or has already started, we'd expect to see imports and exports go down. And in October, we saw U.S. imports of goods decline by 6.6%. That's a huge decline. And in October, U.S. exports of goods, what we send overseas, declined by 10.4% on a year-over-year basis. Huge decline. Barack Obama said he was going to increase U.S. exports to create jobs that way. Instead, our exports are dropping really fast. U.S. manufacturing is contracting, getting smaller at the fastest pace we've seen since the last recession. Corporate debt defaults have risen to the highest level that we've seen since the last recession. And then brand new credit card numbers that just came out that were just recently released show that holiday sales have gone negative, the growth of holiday sales, for the very first time since the last recession. So all these things that happened last time around are happening right now. And yet Janet Yellen, you know, she was in front of Congress the other day, and a member of Congress asked Janet Yellen, they said, "Hey, Janet Yellen, Citigroup just came out with this report which says there's a 65% chance of a recession in the U.S. next year. What do you think about that?" And she said, "Oh, no, I don't think we're going to have a recession. Everything's going to be fine." Well, you know, that reminded me so much of exactly what Ben Bernanke said in 2008. In mid-2008, Ben Bernanke said, "Oh, the Federal Reserve, we're not forecasting a recession. We don't think a recession's going to happen." When he said that, well, we got the final numbers later. The moment when he said that, a recession had actually already started in the United States, but we didn't know it at the time because we didn't have the final numbers yet. But when he said that, a recession had already started, and I believe when Janet Yellen made that recent statement that she did, I believe that she said that at a time when we're actually already seeing a recession start here in the United States.
Yeah, we're certainly headed down that path. There's no question. I want to return to something that you just brought up. And that would be the price of oil, the $38 barrel price of oil. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. Help me understand this relationship. My concern here is that the oil's that low, getting available credit could be problematic, and we could have a problem getting food to market. Is there anything to that?
Well, I don't think that's going to happen next week, but certainly, you know, moving down the road, we're looking at those type of scenarios play out. You know, a lot of people say, "Oh, the price of oil is low." That is good news for because people think, "Oh, I go to the gas station; it doesn't cost me as much money to fill up my tank," and you know, people like that. But really, the energy industry has been the primary engine of growth of good jobs, good paying jobs in this country since the last crisis. But now a lot of these shale companies, a lot of these energy companies are getting into big trouble. They're laying off thousands of workers. People are losing good paying jobs. Their debt is going bad. It's causing big problems on Wall Street. And it's a highly a deflationary situation. And so, you know, it's greatly contributing to our economic slowdown. In fact, the velocity of money in the United States has dropped to the lowest level ever recorded. Now, if people aren't familiar with the velocity of money, when an economy is functioning smoothly, when things are going well, I come and buy something from you, then you go and buy something from someone else. Money circulates efficiently and smoothly and rapidly. But when things get bad, when people are scared, when things aren't working efficiently, when problems are arising, the velocity of money slows down. People hold on to their money more tightly. And so if you look at a chart of this, through every recession in the post-World War II era, the velocity of money has dropped. And that makes sense. You know, because hard times, money doesn't flow around as smoothly. Well, and of course, in the 2008-2009 recession, the velocity of money dropped dramatically. But then a funny thing happened. The recession ended, and we saw the velocity of money tick up slightly for a very short period of time. But then it started going down again, and it kept going down and down and down and down. And it's kept going down, has not gone back up. And in fact, just recently hit the lowest level ever recorded. It's a sign of an extremely sick and dysfunctional economy in terms of the real economy And I think it's just another one of these signs of big trouble on the horizon.
Hey, Michael, you know, the IMF just added the Chinese yuan to the basket of currencies. It's a historic move. You talk about signs, you know, the dollar, the days of the dollar empire, I believe, are waning. Do you see this move by the IMF as sort of being just one more dagger in the heart of the dollar? I mean, eventually things are really going to be moving over to the east, are they not? I mean, you see a lot of that happening now.
We are seeing a big shift, and without a doubt, I believe the U.S. dollar is headed for death. It's going to completely collapse. But in the short term, kind of a different scenario is playing out. Before the crisis of 2008, the U.S. dollar surged in value compared to other global currencies. This put a lot of stress on the global financial system and helped contribute significantly to that crisis. The same thing is happening right now. The U.S. dollar in recent months has surged against other global currencies, and this is really putting a tremendous amount of stress on emerging markets, such as Brazil, which has already plunged into what Goldman Sachs is calling a depression in Brazil. But why this is causing so much problem is because during the boom years, quantitative easing, the easy dollars, emerging markets, countries like Brazil and others, and then companies in those countries, they went on a tremendous debt binge. They gorged on U.S. debt, much of it denominated in U.S. dollars. Well, when the U.S. dollar rises significantly, what happens is it takes a lot more of their own local currencies to pay back and service those debts. So that's a problem on one hand. On the other end, the prices that these emerging markets are getting for their commodities that they export, oil that they export, those have gone down tremendously, in part because of the dollar. And so emerging markets, you know, we're just seeing chaos all over the world, particularly in South America. And so really, most Americans don't realize this, but in much of the world, a full-blown financial crisis has already erupted, stock markets crashing all over the place. In fact, if you look at the 93 largest stock market indexes in the entire world, 47 of them, which is slightly more than half, 47 of them are not only just down, 47 of them are gone down so far this year at least 10%. You know, we've already started a global financial crisis, but because the stock market in the U.S. is still, you know, doing okay, we're down from the peak, definitely, but we're still doing okay. Most Americans, you know, seem to think that, well, no big crisis is happening. But in much of the rest of the world, we've already seen tremendous stock market crashes all over the planet.
There's no question about that. Well, you're listening again to WMQM. We are The Common Sense Show. Our website is thecommonsenseshow.com. Dave and Jim here with our special guest, Michael Snyder. And let me tell you about my good friend, Bob Griswold of readymaderesources.com. It almost sounds like it's not a matter of if the dollar is going to crash, but many economists are saying when the dollar crashes, are you going to be prepared? Because it's not just about having precious metals rather than get locked up in currency and losing your money. That's one half of the equation. The other part of what we're looking at, do you have sufficient resources to carry you through? A recent study by FEMA said 75% of Americans couldn't get through 3 days. That's not where you want to be, folks, when this takes place, because you don't want to be the person having to crawl through my window or my neighbor's window, because that's when things really get ugly. Become resourceful. Become independent. You know, Bob Griswold, Ready Made Resources, have a whole design of survival equipment that you need to take a look at. Go to his website, readymaderesources.com, where you'll see water filters, night vision. He has the PVS auto-gated 14, which is absolutely the best on the market. He's offering a guarantee money back for a week. And I got to tell you, folks, if the bad guy has night vision at night and he's coming after you and your family and your resources and you don't have it, you're going to lose. He also has solar generators. I mean, just a whole host of supplies. So I encourage you to check out Bob's equipment at readymaderesources.com and then give him a call. He'll consult with you on your needs. His number is 1-800-627-3809. Again, his number is 1-800-627-3809. As I said, we're talking with Michael Snyder. And Michael, this is really frightening stuff, and I'm going to add a little fuel to the fire here. Not too long ago, the S&P just downgraded 8 major banks. What kind of influence is that going to have on the average American?
Well, I'm very concerned about the banking sector. And in terms of, you know, we remember too big to fail back in, you know, that was such a problem in 2008. And our politicians, our leaders said, oh, we're never going to let this happen again. We're going to solve this problem. So too big to fail is never a threat to our system again. Well, of course, they didn't fix anything. Instead, the problem's gotten worse. If you look at the too big to fail banks, well, you know, once again, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, you know, Wells Fargo. Collectively, the too big to fail banks have gotten more than 40% larger since the last crisis. Meanwhile, 1,400 smaller banks have totally gone out of existence. So the problem of too big to fail is now a bigger problem than ever before. Meanwhile, as we alluded to earlier, these banks have become even more reckless with their derivatives. And so forth, this incredibly reckless gambling they've been involved in, where their exposure to derivatives is many, 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 many times their total assets, what they have on hand. And so, yeah, I in the crisis that's coming, I expect that we are going to see too big to fail banks actually fail. I believe that's going to cause a tremendous credit crunch in this country. And so what is a credit crunch going to mean? It's going to mean that banks aren't going to want to lend to one another or to anyone else. So it's going to be real hard to get a mortgage, an auto loan, anything like that. All of a sudden, it's going to seem like no one can get money. No one has money to spend. If you own a business or you work for a business, you're going to notice a lot less people coming in. You're going to notice people don't have money to spend. People can't get credit. And so it's going to have a dramatic impact on all of us. All of a sudden, businesses are going to start failing. That people are going to get laid off by the millions like we saw last time around. And because most Americans, 62% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck, we're going to see people default in their mortgages, foreclosures skyrocket, people going from living a middle-class existence to being out on the street very, very rapidly. And so as we saw last time around, these things can play out very, very quickly. So you need to get prepared. So I love that, what the things you guys are advertising. Dave, you just mentioned Robert Griswold. I had a wonderful conversation with him just recently here, and he was one of my very first advertisers on the Economic Collapse blog when I first started out. He's been with me all these years. You know, if you're listening to this radio program and you want someone that's really, really solid, I mean, not just someone you can go buy emergency food from, but someone that's a real solid guy who, you know, lives with integrity, that is an expert, a survivalist expert. I just can't say enough good things about Robert Griswold. So, if you're listening to this show, listen to what Dave is saying. Listen, because ready-made resources, Robert Griswold, I mean, that guy is just outstanding. So I'd encourage everyone, if you need to prepare, go check him out.
Unquestionably, that's true.
You know, Michael, if we could move over a little bit more to social issues. I know your expertise is in economic stuff, but I've interviewed you 3 or 4 times before, and I know you can speak about a variety of topics. Although you don't really have a quote-unquote, wouldn't call it a Christian blog, I know you have a viewpoint on those matters. What do you think, Michael? You know, I see the main problem that ails us here, and we do have a heart condition in this country, and I see us turning our eyes off of God and more towards our own lusts. What do you see about the state of the pulpits, Michael, in this country, the 501c3 churches? Do you see that as being one of the main reasons that we're in the state that we're in right now, is because of the pulpits being weak? Because that's what, how I see it. What's your comment on that?
Oh, I completely agree with you. You know, the church in America is a mess. And we've got all these preachers up there. You know, there's some television preachers that will absolutely never use the word sin because they don't want to offend anyone. They don't want to make people feel bad. So they purposely avoid ever saying the word sin, even though it's all over the Bible. They won't say it. because they don't want to offend anyone. They don't want to, you know, we've got all these seeker friendly churches. They want to make people comfortable. They don't want to talk about abortion. They don't want to talk about gay marriage. They don't want to talk about our corrupt government. They don't want to talk about any of the New World Order or any of these things because they don't want to scare people away. They want the donations to continue to come in. They want the, you know, and to so many of these ministries, it's all about the money. But we, you know, we have to tell the American people the truth. And I believe that this year is a turning point, 2015. And let me explain what I mean by that. In the legal world, you know, as I explained earlier, I come from a legal background. Well, in the legal world, before there is a, before a sentence is administered, a pronouncement of guilt is declared. In other words, prisoners are shown why they're guilty, and a pronouncement of guilt is made before they go to prison or whatever happens to them. And I believe something similar is happening to us as a nation as a whole. I believe that in 2015, we've been shown our guilt as a nation, whether it's the Supreme Court gay marriage decision, whether it's the whole Ashley Madison thing, where all kinds of people, ministers, preachers in America were exposed for going to the that adultery website. Or more than anything else, if you look at the Planned Parenthood undercover videos, I believe it's no accident that they came out exactly when they did. So we've had all of these videos come out, undercover videos showing that, you know, Planned Parenthood is, you know, we're killing millions of babies. We're chopping them up into pieces, harvesting their organs, selling those organs off to the highest bidder where they're being used in some of the most bizarre scientific experiments imaginable. And now, thanks to these videos, this was put on display for the entire country and the entire world to see. And following the release of most of those videos, a survey was taken. This was in USA Today. And they asked the American people, should we cut off federal funding for Planned Parenthood? The question wasn't whether we should shut Planned Parenthood down, which would be going even farther. It was just, okay, should we stop giving Planned Parenthood hundreds of millions of dollars a year after, you know, everything that we've seen? Well, the results of the survey absolutely astounded me. 65% of all Americans said, no, we want to keep funding Planned Parenthood. And only 29% of all Americans said, yes, let's stop giving them hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So by more than a 2-to-1 margin, the American people said, oh, we've seen what everything that's happening. Let's continue doing that. When I saw that, what came into my spirit was that America is done. America is finished. We become just like Nazi Germany. We're murderous butchers, and yet most of the country not only is fine with it going on, they want to keep funding it with our tax dollars. So, yeah, our country has fallen. Our country has been shown their guilt, but instead of repenting, we just continue to race even more toward evil. So I believe that the judgment of God is imminent. The judgment of God is coming. The judgment of God is coming to this nation to a degree most people would never even possibly imagine. And we are going to deserve every single ounce of what is about to happen to us.
You know, I could not agree with you more, Michael. It's we are clearly a nation under judgment. I wrote an article today, the two reasons why America is going to burn, and I'll skip the psychological reason and cut right to the chase. We don't fear God. We've turned our back on God. We have forsaken the commandments, and this is what we get. We have earned where we are at, but I do believe, and I'll get your comment on this, I do believe that as we could economically survive individually by being prepared, I also believe we could survive spiritually by taking care of our own house.
Oh, I very much agree with you, Dave. And that's the good news. It's not all bad news because, you know, and I'm encouraging people to prepare on an individual, a family, a community level. And, you know, you've got physical preparation, mental, emotional, and everything else, but then also spiritual preparation. And even in the midst of all the chaos and darkness, God is raising up a remnant. And it's happening not only in this country, but all over the world. He's raising up a remnant that I believe that is going to be the remnant of the last days described in the scriptures in the Bible. In fact, this group of people, I believe, is talked about in the book of Revelation. The Apostle John, nearly 2,000 years ago, in Revelation 12:17, Revelation 14:12. He talked about a group of people in the last days that would keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. And I believe that this group of people will shine the light in these last days, will bring in the greatest harvest of souls the world has ever seen between right now and the return of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and that we're going to experience the greatest move of God the world has ever seen. And so my wife and I, every day we pray together and we pray that God would allow us to be part of this great move of God that's coming, because there's no guarantee any of us get to be a part of it, but we want to be part of it. We want to be part of what God's doing on the cutting edge in these last days. And, you know, it's so encouraging to hear you guys talk about these things as well.
I don't think we have a choice. Jim, let me hold that thought just for a second. I'm going to step aside for our last break here. And that break has to do with what Jim and I manage. When we began our work, and we really wanted to help people. And one of the things that we firmly believe from all the experts we've talked to, you mentioned Robert Griswold, I rely on his advice heavily, as I do Steve Quayle. And one of the things that we concluded is that people better have a minimum of 1 year worth of storable foods. And you better have seeds, too. You better have the seeds to go with it, because you're going to have to grow your own after your supplies run out. We really recommend that if you want to be sure, you better have 2 years. And we have set that up. We have a grab-and-go bucket you've heard me talk about this week, 76 delicious meals. And I'm not exaggerating when I say it tastes like it's from a restaurant. I know Jim White totally agrees with that assessment. It's reasonably priced, and if you got to leave town quickly, it's right there for you to grab. And you got 76 meals for you and your family. And also a companion to that, I think every food survival storage strategy needs to have something for the kids. So we have organic powdered milk, very reasonably priced. And both products we're offering 6 months, same as cash. So we're trying to help you finance your own survival. I mean, we believe that strongly in it. It's not the money we're taking to the bank, because Jim and I are losing money on this venture. But what you need to know, and we're not asking you to feel sorry for us, by the way, but what you need to know is this is something we feel from the heart. We feel moved to bring these products to you, because we think these products should be staples for every single American. So please go to foodforliberty.com/Hodges. That's foodforliberty.com/Hodges, and you'll see all the other fine products that we have available. Jim, back to you.
Thanks, Dave. You know, Michael, Dave and I do quite a few different radio shows and talk to a lot of different guests. And recently, we certainly haven't let any of them get out of the booth, so to speak, without talking about Donald Trump. It's Trump mania across the country. He's coming out and he's saying things that have never probably been said before by politicians in public. They've probably said a lot of these things privately, but certainly not in front of, you know, major mainstream media outlets. And he just seems to just plow forward with reckless abandon. Now, I'm sure it's all planned, because he's winning. So he's doing something correct. You know, we postulate on this show whether he is a plant, whether he's for real. You know, is he going to drop out at the end? What say you, Michael, about Donald Trump? I know you have a viewpoint on him. Do you think he's the real deal? Do you think maybe his ideas are good? Maybe he's not the man for the White House. But what say you about Donald Trump?
Well, I think that, you know, we've seen a huge response to Donald Trump, and a lot of people are trying to figure out why, but I think it's pretty basic in that finally there's a politician that's standing up, and he's, you know, he's proud of what he believes. He's bold. He's strong. He doesn't talk like our politicians do, and so many, especially so many politicians that are supposedly conservative or on the right end of the spectrum or whatever you want to say, for so long Republicans have been apologizing, have been, you know, almost ashamed of what they believe, and here Donald Trump stands up and he's very proud of what he believes, and he's saying things strongly. He's not making any apologies for it. And he's telling it like how he believes he sees it. And so people are responding to that strength, that boldness, that courage, which has been so lacking in terms of the Republicans, conservatives, you know, whatever you want to call them. And so I think people are really responding to that. And certainly he's saying some really good things in terms of, you know, we need to protect our border. You know, our borders, particularly, you know, our southern border with Mexico is wide open. We might not as well even have a border. People are pouring through. And so people, you know, it's just common sense. We've got to protect the border. And so people are rallying to that, I believe. And so, you know, on the one hand, that's a good thing. Now, in terms of will Donald Trump ever become president? No, I don't believe he ever will. I believe the global elite will move heaven and earth to make sure Donald Trump never gets into the White House. They'll do whatever's necessary to keep that from happening. And so, no, I don't expect we'll ever see Donald. In fact, if he got the, if he actually got the Republican nomination, I would be absolutely astounded, even if he got that far. So no, I don't think he has any chance of actually winning. I think the global elite would go to any extreme to make sure that that didn't happen. But thirdly, you know, I want to make some points in that, you know, a lot of conservatives and people have rallied to Donald Trump, because of the strength of what he's saying. But I would encourage people to look a little deeper at what he actually believes. First of all, he says he's pro-life, but then he's come out and he said, no, abortion's not murder. And, you know, and when asked about Planned Parenthood, he said, yeah, they do some bad things, but they also do some good things. He's very, very squishy on the question of abortion. And he's just a recent convert to being pro-life anyway. So I think in terms of abortion, very squishy, very questionable. The same thing's true with gay marriage. Donald Trump's basic opinion is, well, the Supreme Court's decided it, let's move on. No sense worrying about it anymore. So that's not exactly the kind of Christian stance, moral stance we want to see from a leader on that issue. And then also, if you look at the in terms of his stance on Israel, Donald Trump is very much in favor of a two-state solution dividing the land of Israel. And Donald Trump just recently came out a few days ago and said he would not rule out dividing the city of Jerusalem. That is something which in particularly troubles me. So Donald Trump is there are a whole lot of things about him that trouble me. But like I said, the reason people are responding to him so much is because they say, well, here's finally a strong leader willing to stand up to Obama, willing to stand up to Hillary Clinton, willing to stand up on immigration and other issues. And so people are rallying to his strength. But I think there's more than meets the eye there. What do you guys think?
Yeah. That's my feeling too, exactly. This man has done nothing but hobnob with the elite. He has shared attending marriages with the Clintons and other formal functions, family functions. They appear on the surface to be very good friends. And I'll tell you, my operating hypothesis, and listen, I wished I was wrong, but I can't convince myself I'm wrong, Michael, because of the fact that this man hangs out with the rich. Why should he care about the middle class, number one? And then number two, if he destroys the Republican Party and he's making the other Republican candidates look so impotent, politically speaking, that he's destroying the Republican Party, then Hillary just marches into the White House, and that was his intention after all. I can't shake that feeling. Is he the modern-day version of Ross Perot?
Yeah, you know, there could definitely be a lot more going behind the scenes than we know, and I think he is doing damage to the Republican Party. And, you know, like I saw a survey just this week where Hillary Clinton was 11 points ahead of Donald Trump. So if somehow the elite allowed Donald Trump to get the nomination, it appears that Hillary would have a pretty easy path into the White House. And I think that's the elite's plan A right now, is to go with Hillary for the next election. But we'll see. You know, in my opinion, I think a whole lot's going to happen between now and the next election. And I would not be surprised if the elections did not actually happen as scheduled. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, Michael, that's a point that's been brought up quite a few times. Let's hope that we're all wrong on that one. You know, we got about 10 minutes left, Michael, and one of the things I see, and I know Dave and I have talked about it, and he's written about it certainly, and you probably have as well. Hamtramck, Michigan now is really pretty much fully Sharia law. I don't think it's going to be the last town that's going to be Sharia law. I'll give you a second.
Sorry.
It's okay. That's all right. Hamtramck, Michigan, I don't think is the last town that's going to be going to be overtaken by Sharia law. Do you see the sort of the Islamification of America as being one of the greatest threats to us currently as a nation?
I do. I just look at what's happening in Europe, where entire communities are being overrun, and church services are being disrupted, and Islamists are just going right into churches and causing chaos. They're causing chaos, and they're going in and trashing supermarkets and so we're seeing a similar thing happen here, and given enough time, it would get worse and worse and worse. And Barack Obama, a lot of people have been throwing around this 10,000 figure for Syrian refugees. Well, if you go on Barack Obama's official Twitter account, this was before the Paris attacks, he proudly made this announcement that the number of Syrian and other refugees that were going to be coming into this country was going to be increased to 100,000 per year. And he was very, very proud of this. And this number was reported in the New York Times as well. This was just before the Paris attacks. Of course, the Paris attacks came, and then all of a sudden they didn't want to talk about that number anymore. They wanted to kind of hush everything up because, all of a sudden there was such an uproar about these refugees coming in. But Barack Obama, he wants to bring them over. And when you look at these refugees, very, very few of them are Christian. They're almost overwhelmingly Muslim, and pretty overwhelmingly Sunni Muslim, spreading the same kind of radical ideology. And of course, we just saw with the attacks in San Bernardino. And what the mainstream media is not focusing on is that prior to those attacks, the guy who did the shooting with his wife, well, he had been getting into arguments with a coworker. The coworker was a pro-Israel Messianic Jewish Christian who attended a Messianic congregation in the area. But they had been arguing about Islam and Christianity, and is Islam a peaceful religion? And this guy Farouk was saying Islam is going to rule the world. And so, it's my opinion that it was those conversations and those arguments which precipitated the shooting at this holiday party. And of course, among the 14 dead was the guy, the 52-year-old coworker, the Messianic Christian that he had been getting into these arguments with. That was one of the guys they shot out of the 14 dead. But the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about this because the mainstream media doesn't want to highlight the fact that, okay, radical Islamists are coming in and then they're targeting Christians and wanting to kill Christians for what they believe. Because, that's going to make Muslims look bad. But yeah, this is a huge danger. It's a massive problem. And it's our world is going crazy. And one of the biggest problems we are facing is the threat of radical Islam.
Michael, one of the things that really upset me, and I brought this up on yesterday's broadcast, was the fact that in the aftermath of the San Bernardino shooting, Loretta Lynch, or better known as Steve Quayle calls her, Loretta Lynch Mob, she comes out and she says, if you speak out against Islam or Muslims, we're going to come after you. We're going to violate your First Amendment. We're going to throw you in jail where we can shut you up. And not one word of sympathy or empathy for the 14 victims and their families.
Yeah, it's all about political correctness. It's all about, we've got such wicked leadership in this country. And they don't care about the people who were killed. They care more about the radical terrorists than they do about the victims. I mean, it's really tragic to see, but this is how far America has fallen.
Michael, we're coming here towards the end of the broadcast, so we just got a few minutes left. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your websites? I know you have a few of them. You mentioned them a little bit earlier. I know you have a book that you wrote here. Well, I guess it's been about a year or so ago. I may be off on that a little bit, but I think about a year or so ago you wrote a book, maybe last summer, the summer before last. Before we get off the air here, let the listeners know, if you don't mind, how they can find out more about your fine work.
Yeah, the primary website I'm known for is the Economic Collapse blog. It's at the economiccollapseblog.com, or if you just go to Google and type in the Economic Collapse, is the first result that comes up. I also have a website called endoftheamericandream.com where I write about a broader variety of issues than just economics. And then if someone wants to find just a single location where they can find all my articles, if they go to themostimportantnews.com, the website's called The Most Important News. It's got all of my articles there in one central location. And then in terms of my books, I've got two books out right now, a novel entitled The Beginning of the End and a nonfiction book that I co-authored with a co-author entitled Get Prepared Now. Both of those are available on Amazon.com. And there's a new book I'm working on right now. I'm not ready to release the title yet, but it's about the last days, about the end times, about so it's a very much a Christian book. It addresses the question of the rapture very directly. That book is coming out early 2016, so I want people to keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, very good. And we're going to have you back on to talk about that. We're going to have you back early and often, my friend. This has been terrific. And folks, if this is the first time that you've heard Michael Snyder, what you see is what you get here. This is typical Michael Snyder. And he is one of the most respected and prolific writers on the web. And he's a frequent talk show host guest. And he's certainly not going to be a stranger to what we're doing. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. I love the work that you guys do, and you guys are doing such a great job. I love your writing, Dave. And so I just encourage you guys to keep up the great work. And thank you so much again for inviting me to be on today.
Thank you, Michael. The Economic Collapse blog.com. Yes, I can say that three times fast. And it's been Michael Snyder. It's been our privilege to have him as a guest. And Jim, let me throw it back to you. What's on tap for tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow we're going to have our friend Paul Preston from Agenda 21 Radio. He'll be our guest tomorrow for the broadcast. And if you're not familiar with Paul, he's a good friend of ours, great radio show host, and he has a great program over there and does a lot of good work. He has a lot of breaking news and cutting-edge type stuff. And then Friday we're going to have the last part of the show. We're going to have Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America is going to be on for the last part of the show on Friday. So that's what we got going on this week.
Yeah, you done good stuff. I know you secured Larry Pratt yesterday, and in the midst of what's going on with Obama throwing people, obviously he's going to be throwing millions of people onto the no-fly list so he can get their guns. It's going to be really good to get Larry Pratt's perspective. And Paul Preston's one of my favorite people. And if you haven't heard Paul Preston before, he's best known for Agenda 21, but we're going to try to sneak in a little Adolf Hitler on you. Man, does he have some insight on that topic? I'll tell you what, just going to be a fantastic two shows coming up. We really appreciate you being here with us. Visit our website at thecommonsenseshow.com, and we will see you back tomorrow. Go out and have a great day. God bless.